Before we begin, we would like to thank Six Point Builders for their support of our show. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap, part of the Believe Network. We're coming to you after the New England Revolution. Their four-game win streak came to a painful end as the Columbus Crew won 5-1 in Foxborough on Saturday night. Ima Boateng actually gave the home side the lead early, but the Columbus Crew dominated the rest of the game with five unanswered goals, sending the fans home quite miserable and making the four-game win streak a thing of the past. I'm Greg Johnstone, joined by Sean Donahue today. Sean, how's it going?
Yeah, I unfortunately went to the game on Saturday, so that was glad to put that in the rearview mirror and talk about that today. But things are going better before watching that game.
Yep. I may regret saying we are going to finish June unbeaten. I might slightly regret having a little bit too much confidence going into that game versus Columbus, but it seemed like just a poor week front to back for the Revolution. Thomas Chankalai has been put on the season-ending injury list, which we'll talk about at the end of the show. There was news that Carlos Hill and Dylan Barrero are dealing with injuries, and it all accumulated up to the game against Columbus Crew, which it seemed like every concern and flaw we've thought about this team has reared its ugly head, and we got arguably the worst performance of the season so far, which is saying a lot. And Sean, I think you had a stat that the Revs, this is their biggest home loss, tied for their biggest home loss in franchise history in MLS play, correct?
Yes. Yeah. They lost to Philadelphia 4-0 in 2016 and to Chivas USA in 2010, 4-0. I have to say, I only went back to 2022. I mean, I started 2002, Gillette Stadium era. I don't think they had a loss bigger than that before that, but the stat is the tied for the biggest loss since they've moved to Gillette Stadium.
Mm-hmm. So continuing to break records here, your 2024 New England Revolution. But before we get into any more misery, we want to tell you about our friends over at BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all of your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right all the way to the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with over 150 slots games. So head over to the website today and get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. Again, that's promo code BLEAV for a 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. Bet online, the game starts here. And by the way, Sean, we were talking about the week of misery. The USA, I mean, we're not going to talk about it a lot. Panama, USA losing to Panama. I mean, my goodness, that was on my birthday, too. That was, the Applebee's was wonderful, but we ended the night with the USA debacle against Panama. It looks like they are not moving on past Uruguay. Matt Turner is hurt. Everything's in the downfall right now, soccer-wise.
That was very disappointing. I will say, it looked like Matt Turner was training in full today, so that might be the one glimmer of good news at the moment. But U.S. getting past Uruguay seems very, very unlikely the way they're playing right now and the way Uruguay is playing. So I'm not too hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Davis, Matt Turner, you're our only hope. But yeah, the USA is looking quite bad. Canada's advancing, but the USA looks like they might not, because Panama beat them on their home soil in Copa America. So anyway, let's move on to equally depressing game to talk about, this Revolution game. And let's get into our key takeaways, brought to you by our friends over at the Rebellion Support Group. Be sure to check them out on Twitter at NERebellion or their website at NERebellion.org. Sean, what is your key takeaway from this game?
Yeah, so I'll start by saying it's easy to write this one off when you look at who is missing from the Revolution. No Carlos Hill. We know the Revs are a much worse team when Carlos Hill doesn't play. No Thomas Chankalai. He's going to be out for the season. No Dylan Barrero. So arguably the Revs' three best chance creators missing for this game, which is a big blow for them to deal with. You know, what wasn't missing, though, was their starting defense for the most part, outside of, you know, Brandon Bynoe not being ready to go 90 minutes. And, you know, they were all there. So they gave up five goals with their starting defense. So that's the negative side. But my real takeaway from this one is the problems that existed before that four-game winning streak still exist. And really, a lot of these guys are who we thought they were. And you know, that goes back to Arriaga, who's been getting so much praise for the, you know, during this winning streak since he came over here. You know, he was known as a guy that was error prone at times. His last game with Seattle, a huge error led to a goal that lost him the game. So you know, he's been a guy that is known for this, and that's why he was benched by Seattle and why he was expendable. And we saw it in a big way in this game, in which, you know, he was responsible, at least in part, for, you know, two or three of these goals that they gave up. So it was a really poor performance from him. And I think he was exposed, as, you know, the guy that we kind of knew he was when the Revs got him. We didn't see it as much over the 4-game winning streak, but we saw it in this game. And then, you know, I got to give credit to my colleague, Tom Pinzone. I'm so glad we brought him onto the show along with Andy, because we get different perspectives from them. And he talked about last week about how, you know, Aljaž Ivačić is pretty slow to react. And you certainly saw that in this game too. That Arston goal that was, you know, into the corner, I thought that was a savable play, and he just was rooted to the ground. And there were a couple times where he was pretty slow to react in this game. And, you know, maybe I was focusing more on that because Tom brought it up last week, but it wasn't something that I had particularly paid that much attention to. And this game, certainly it was on full display. So, you know, the two new guys are not perfect. You know, I'm not going to trash them too hard. They've been good additions overall for the Revolution, but you know, you saw some of the weaknesses there from them. And then at the same time, you know, you saw some of the weaknesses from several other players on this team that you knew existed. Mark Anthony Kay had a poor game. Nick Lima, I think, showed why he's, you know, despite the fact that Caleb Porter said it's his job to lose, he showed why it's, you know, he's going to lose that job when Brandon Bagge gets healthy based on his performance in this game. And, you know, based on what we've been seeing from him. So yeah, a lot of bad from this game. And I don't know if there's any player that really comes out of this from a lot of credit. And of course I have to mention Giacomo Vrioni, who, you know, after scoring a brace last week, looked absolutely terrible in this game and wasted two really good chances and a couple other chances as well. So yeah, it was kind of a reality check for the Revs. And again, you know, you can write off the loss. I think when you saw the lineup, you knew it was pretty likely the Revs were going to lose, but the way they lost and the mistakes that were made, you know, those are things that you should be concerned about going forward. Those are things that are going to continue to haunt the Revs if they don't clean it up. And that's not because Carlos Hill wasn't out there that those happened.
Yeah. I mean, if Carlos Hill played in this game, maybe they lose 5-2 or 5-3 instead of 5-1. I don't think it really changes the defensive performance. And you did a good job kind of highlighting the major, I'll say, weaknesses yesterday. Where, you know, Ivačić and Arriaga have been pretty solid since they've come over. And then yesterday, they both seemed to play pretty poor. The second goal specifically, I believe it was the second goal. It's hard to keep track of them. But, you know, Esmir is just making a simple pass back to Arriaga, and the ball just goes off of his foot, leads to a throw-in. And Columbus, you know, to their credit, picks up the pace, you know, uses it, gets a quick throw-in in. The defense is still kind of scrambling around, and then they're able to kind of one-touch around Arriaga and shoot, you know, curl the ball perfectly into the far corner. With, again, Ivačić, as you mentioned, pretty flat-footed. On a lot of those goals, very flat-footed. Doesn't even look like he's ready to react, which is, again, we'll give Tom another credit. I think he would have really enjoyed to be on this show this week. I think he'd be having a lot of I told you so's. Really, really poor performance, too. And I'll also say another thing too, that, you know, we talk about Arriaga and, you know, he carries the ball up a lot. You know, he seems to, I think Taylor Twellman had a tweet today about how he roams and sometimes gets caught out of position. And there was one goal yesterday. It was the one where Columbus kind of swung it back and forth and they end up scoring in the center of the box. And if you look at where Arriaga is, you know, he's trailing on the play far, far back from where he should be. You know, there was another play that I noticed where Dave Romney was kind of caught upfield and there's a turnover and Dave Romney had to sprint all the way back to the back line. The defense took them a little while to recover. So it seems like the center backs being out of position, I don't know if that's by design, but it certainly seems like there's points where the back line is kind of scrambling for cover. And I think the good teams are going to exploit that. And maybe the teams we've faced in the past few weeks haven't been able to, but Columbus looked, I mean, phenomenal against this defense. I mean, it looked like a complete 180 from what we've seen in the past 3-4 weeks. And there shouldn't be a lot of heads held up high after that performance yesterday. That was probably one of the weakest defensive performances I've seen since we've been doing this podcast. So, you know, it doesn't go to one person or two people, because you mentioned Vrioni too on the offensive side. There was some offensive firepower lacking as well. Just a really, really frustrating night, top to bottom, front to back. And, you know, every team gets a few of these performances a year, but it seems like the Revs have had a few of these performances this year. And you have to wonder too if these are fluky performances where you're running into the wrong team on the wrong day and you're missing a handful of players, or if there's some actual cracks in the foundation here.
Yeah, and you know, in talking about Rioni again quickly, you know, I talked about the lack of chance creators on this Revolution team for given who was out injured. He actually had a surprising number of chances in this game. You know, to full credit to the rest of the team for stepping up and creating opportunities for him. You know, he finished with 0.93 expected goals. You know, five shots. He certainly should have put at least one in the back of the net. I think he should have put two in the back of the net. You know, I don't think the expected goals factors in the great chance that Boateng set up for him with that cross where he just whiffed on the header. I don't think that was even factored in there. And that was kind of a point blank header that he could have had. So, you know, a very disappointing performance from him coming off of a good performance. But both ends of the field were shocking. But, you know, again, you're facing Columbus Crew, the defending MLS Cup champs. They're a really, really good team. Even a fully healthy Revs team that, you know, wasn't making a lot of mistakes was going to be up against it, against this Crew team. But to play the way they played while missing those guys, it was always going to be a bloodbath.
It seemed like there was a lot of things they could have controlled that they struggled with. I think that's a good way. You know, Joe Mazzulla talks in his press conferences about we did the things we can control. And I've kind of started to think that way. And there's a lot of human error along with the Revs this past game where there's a lot of simple mistakes that they made that really, really you shouldn't be seeing at this part of the season. So,
well, and they started the game really well too. You got to note that they, you know, they disrupted the Crew at the beginning. Ima Boateng, you know, fantastic performance from him. Ended up, you know, stealing the ball, scoring that early goal, putting the Revs in the lead. And, you know, again, it was the offensive part of the Revs team that was missing this game. Defense, it was pretty much their first team defense, you know, with the exception of Brandon Bye. So to see them get an early lead kind of unexpectedly and then fall apart the way they did, you know, it has to be disappointing. You know, even if there was maybe a lack of confidence going into the game because they didn't have Carlos Hill, their captain, that certainly should have given them confidence. They had that early lead. They were playing pretty well and then just completely fell off a cliff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. Well, let's go with the glass half full, point of view, and that glass, and that'll be my key takeaway. And the glass half full point of view has nothing to do with this game. But it's more so kind of a look ahead. My key takeaway is that this is not the end point to the Revs season. And if you look at the July schedule coming up, the Revs are still in a very good position to earn some points back. They have five games until League's Cup. They play at home against Atlanta United this Wednesday. They go on the road to Seattle next Saturday. They play at home against Orlando on July 13th. And then they go on the road to Philadelphia. They're struggling right now. That's July 17th. And then you play at home against FC Dallas on July 20th. Those are five games that you can win. That is not a difficult schedule whatsoever. Traveling to Seattle is not ideal, obviously. But I think the highest point in the standings those teams are is ninth. I think Atlanta and Seattle are ninth. Everyone else is out of a playoff position. And you can gain ground on Atlanta, Orlando, and Philadelphia. And Sean, we were talking about this. We don't know what the status of Almada is for Atlanta, but they might be without him on Wednesday as well. So it'll be interesting to see you know, if the Revs are able to throw this result out. And if they're able to move forward and have a successful July, kind of an anti-summer slump, because they certainly had a successful June, all things considered, with 12 points. It's not unrealistic for them to come away with 10, 12 points over the next five games. And, you know, my key takeaway here is to not lose complete faith right now. But I think this next five-game stretch is going to be quite telling because every game is super important. And this is the time you make up ground, especially against three teams that you're going to be battling for playoff position in Atlanta, Orlando, and Philadelphia. So I'm curious to see what the status of Heal is. Curious about what the status of Barrero is. Although I know Barrero, I believe Caleb Porter said he expects him back this week. I don't know if that means for Atlanta or Seattle, but it's not expected to be a long-term injury. But if they can get those guys back healthy, and if this defense can straighten itself out and be the team that we've saw the past few weeks, there is some room for optimism here.
Yeah, but you're right. The health is a big concern question here because they go right into that Atlanta game on Wednesday, and I don't think we have gotten an update on Carlos Hill. Ima Boateng got hurt in this game. I don't know that we heard an update on his status or how he's doing after the game. And you know, of course, Barrero is going to be back Wednesday. He's going to be at Saturday. Who knows? I think Wednesday's coming up quick. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see, and that'll be play a huge part in it. But looking at just to Wednesday quickly, I think Thiago Almada, the fact that he's being sold for potentially $30 million, the biggest transfer fee in MLS history, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if either he has to travel for a physical or the team decides to sit him out on Wednesday, even if the transfer can't be confirmed until July. I'm actually not sure when the transfer can be confirmed, but they said that this could be his last, the last game could be his last home match that he played last weekend. So I don't know what his status would be for Wednesday, but I would not be surprised if, you know, for one reason or another, he's not playing on Wednesday. And, you know, that for Atlanta is like the Revs missing Carles Hill when Almada's out. So that would be a huge boost for the Revs going into Wednesday's match. But you're right. You know, the schedule in July isn't that bad. I think the exception being Seattle, if you look at the record, it's not great, but they're playing a lot better lately. They've won three of their last four games unbeaten. I think even going further back than that, they've only lost one game in the past couple months. So they've been playing a lot better than their record recently. And also they're going to be on full rest and the Revs are going to be in short rest traveling on the road. So that game right there, I think, is a very difficult one. And if, you know, if I'm a betting man, it's probably a loss, but the other games in the schedule aren't that bad for the Revs. And it, you know, this Crew game was probably the most difficult game they had, save other maybe traveling to Seattle.
And we'll learn a lot about this team. I mean, a big narrative and talking point, it seems like, that's come out this week is it just took time for Porter's system to be implemented. We had to work out the kinks. Anytime you work out with a new coach, you go through a process, and that might be true. But if that's true, they should continue their form into July. But I think there is, for me, and I think for you and everyone else following this team, Sean, and not that I want to speak for you, but I think this team, it seems like when they lose big. And when they win, it seems like they win by the skin of their teeth. And they win, I'll say, in unsatisfactory or narrow type ways where they get a lucky bounce here or there. But they still produce some stinkers. I mean, they're not winning many games by multiple goals. And it seems like there's just always a fatal flaw kind of lingering around this team. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to iron that out and if they're able to, you know, Caleb Porter's system kind of hits its stride, because if it is going to hit its stride, it's going to be in July with this schedule. So any disagreement there or anything before I move on?
No, just the last point is, you make a great point, is when they win, it has been kind of by the skin of their teeth. And, you know, going back to my takeaway quickly is, you know, part of it is we're seeing a lot of these guys that have a history of being error prone, and you know, Caleb Porter has excused a lot of games this season that they've lost as being, you know, an individual error, not necessarily a team flaw. But, you know, at some point, when you have a lot of players that are prone to individual errors and, you know, are more on the veteran side and they're still doing that, you know, guys like Arriaga, like Mark Anthony K, and you're winning these games by the skin of your teeth, you have to get a lot, very, very lucky to have that 4-game winning streak the Revs had. And I think there were a lot of games in there where they had some good luck. So it's, you know, until they can put more goals in the back of the net and win by larger margins, you know, you look at this game and the mistakes that were made, and there is a lot of reason to be concerned going forward, even if the Revs are starting to find that system, because there's a lot of guys in that lineup that, you know, have a history of individual errors, and at any point that can come back to haunt you when you're in a 1-0 game or, you know, a one goal margin game.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely agree. Let's get over to some listener questions. Our listener mailbag is brought to you by Subject Law. You can find Subject Law's website in our show notes. And by the way, before I get going, I do want to mention one quick administrative change we're going to implement going forward. If you've followed the podcast and you ask us questions, we typically send kind of a thank you tweet and we tag everyone who sends in questions. I think from now on, we'll just thank you on the show. I've gotten a complaint that sometimes we tag some people and they don't like, you know, everyone liking it and getting all of the notifications. And on top of that, it's extremely tedious to tag. I mean, we're getting like 40 questions a week now. So we're going to kind of just say thank you on the podcast. We're going to get rid of the thank you tweet, but we still do appreciate it. So thank you all for sending them in. Keep sending them in, but we won't be doing the annoying thank you tag from now on. So just a quick note, if we don't thank you on Twitter, it's not because we're not grateful. It's just because it's getting a little much to do all that. But our first question comes from Dave via email, and you can send in your questions via email as well to revolutionrecap@gmail.com. He says, do you think Caleb is going to go back to Mark Anthony Kay and Matt Polster pairing now? Based on what I've seen, Buck should start every game he is available, but I don't have faith in Caleb Porter to keep playing him. Sean, what do you think Caleb Porter does with his midfield?
You know, that's a tough question. I think that's a tougher question than, I know we got some center back questions later, but I'm not sure. I lean towards he probably will go back to Polster and Kay. The two of them were playing pretty well during the beginning of this winning stretch. If you've listened to the show for a long time, you know I'm not a big Mark Anthony Kay fan. You also know I've soured a bit on Polster this season, but I do think that that's Caleb's preferred pairing, and I don't necessarily know that after this last game, he's going to have much of a reason to not go back to his preferred pairing. You know, I don't think it's necessarily fair to Buck and Harks, you know, based on how they've played previous games. But I do think that when you lose the game 5-1 and, you know, Caleb kind of has his guys, that, you know, he may have been staying away from those guys for whatever reason, whether, you know, in this case, injury. But then I don't know if he was 90 minutes fit this game. But either way, you know, he didn't get the start here. But I do think that when you lose a game 5-1 and you have your preferred guys and you know, for whatever reason, been forced to go away from them, or somebody's played well and you've gone away from them, you're probably going to go back to them after 5-1. And especially on Wednesday when, you know, it's short rest and you have a guy in K that hasn't played as much recently.
Yeah. Well, and we'll move on to the actual substitution here. John on Twitter says, why, oh, why was Harks taking off for Mark Anthony K? And Hop Skip on Twitter also says, what purpose was Mark Anthony K supposed to serve? I mean, I assume it was just a kind of a planned substitution to get fresh legs on. And I mean, yeah, like Mark Anthony K for Ian Harks, that's obvious. You're trailing in the game. I don't think that's an offensive substitution right there. So I'm guessing it's just a fresh leg substitution, but any issues with the substitution there? And do you think that was a mistake putting on Mark Anthony K?
I mean, the game was already lost at that point. They were down 3-1, no Carlace, no Chocolay, no Barrero. To me, the game was over at halftime. And I think that was almost a kind of save face and try to compact things and not make it worse. Didn't work out. But I don't have a huge issue with the sub. I think Harks, you know, had an okay game, but, you know, he wasn't covered in glory either. Again, I'm not a Mark Anthony K fan. I don't think that was a sub designed to help the Revs win the game. I think it was more of a designed to help them, you know, try to settle things down and not get blown out the way they did. And it didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Teal Forever says, is Sam Minton prepared for whatever vitriol Porter throws his way after tonight? There wasn't any vitriol. They're both friendly yesterday. They got along just great. From what I understand, Caleb Porter, this would have been a bad Tom Pinzone episode, because from what I heard, Porter was accepting of the results, didn't claim they were the better team, didn't make any excuses, really was critical, said the right things, from what I understand. But so no disputes yesterday between Sam and Caleb. But Seal Forever also says, but seriously, was the 4-3-3 too aggressive in this game? What was your thought about the starting lineup and the formation there, Sean?
I didn't hate it, actually. I think you have a home game. You know, you're missing guys. You don't want to defend for 90 minutes at home. And, you know, it started off well. And again, I think a lot of the problems in this game were, you know, the Crew are a very good, strong team tactically, and the Revs made some bad, you know, a lot of bad individual errors, some compounding on each other. But no, I don't mind it. And I also think, you know, the way the lineup was set up, you know, they were in a shape where, you know, 4-3-3 could easily transition to a 4-5-1 when it needed to defensively and when they took that lead. So I don't mind it. Didn't work over the course of the game, and I think there maybe should have been some adjustments made, but, you know, given who was out, I don't hate it.
Yeah, and I feel like they played 4-3-3 previously in CONCACAF Champions League when the Triple C, when Carlos Hill was out, and it worked out. Not that Alajuense is on the same level as Columbus Crew, but I didn't have many issues when I saw the lineup, considering the people that were available. So I didn't hate the 4-3-3 whatsoever. But Alden says, Vrioni stinks so bad. Can't run, can't play, can't head, can't do anything. He's a massive drag. Mark Anthony K also bites. Jack P, obviously not a game changer yet or in this situation. But there is a player in there somewhere. Him and Esmer both aren't really what the team needs out wide, I feel. So a lot to unpack there. I think we get into Vrioni later. So why don't we hit a pause on Vrioni? We just talked about Mark Anthony K. So let's talk about Jack P and Esmer. Jack P finally getting some minutes, kind of by default, kind of because they ran out of bodies. What was your thoughts about Jack P and Esmer tonight? And do you think Jack P is a winger? What do you think? What do you see his potential role being? Or do you think we need a little more data to assess?
I think we need a lot more data to assess for Jack P. I don't think it's fair to assess him, you know, coming into a game for the last 20 minutes with him down 3-1 and very soon after he came on down 4-1. I think that's kind of a no-win situation for Jack P. And, you know, his first minutes since March, I think March 3rd. So, yeah, I, you know, the fact that he's not playing makes me think he's not the answer for the Revs. He's had so much trouble getting minutes. And even these last two games when he got called back up when the Revs were, you know, really short on guys. You know, that's not a good sign, but just trying to judge solely on his first team minutes for the team this year, I think it's an incomplete. So I'm not ready to write him off based on that. But you know, it's not a good sign that he's not getting minutes.
What was your thoughts on their performance though yesterday? I mean, do you think, just in general, let's go shift over to Esmir. Cause we've seen a little bit more of him. What'd you think of Esmir's performance on the night?
I thought it was fine. You know, I mean, as far as the crap performances the Revs had in that game, I thought he was one of the, you know, lesser targets. I heard some people blaming him for the first goal because he, you know, had a pass into the middle that started that turnover, you know, just outside of, out of Columbus's box. I think that's a little bit harsh. But you know, I thought he was okay this game, all things considered. I didn't have a huge issue with his play. You know, he had 0.38 expected assists, which isn't, you know, terrible given how the game played out. Two chances created, one big chance created. If, you know, if Rioni could finish, he'd probably have had a better night. So I don't, you know, he won 5 out of 8 ground duels, better than most people on the team, won a tackle and 2 recoveries. You know, was he amazing? No. Were his set pieces great? You know, maybe not, but I don't know. I think when, you know, if he's your third choice on the wings, when, you know, Barrero is out or Chonkla is out, you're in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm. We did get a question here. Let's talk about Arriaga a little more if you want. Hopskip says, what was Arriaga's deal tonight? Constantly caught out of position. Will he be thrown under the bus like Dave Romney was? And I think there was another couple of comments here. What are the odds Arriaga gets benched by that after that garbage performance tonight, or does he get a pass because he's a Porter guy? And that's from Traeger. What are your thoughts on Arriaga? It seems like he's started pretty much since the Revs have acquired him. And I know that Porter mentioned after Romney got his spot start that he was going to reconsider because, you know, the chemistry was better with Henry Kessler than it was with Dave Romney. It seems like Arriaga was the key guy for Porter, but obviously last night was not a great night for him. Do you think there's any chance we see a swap there, considering, you know, he's been such a staple in this lineup for the past few months?
No. I don't. I think he is a Porter guy at this point. You know, Porter is a big fan of his. You know, at the same time, I there's an inconsistency in how we've seen him handle different players as far as, you know, how many mistakes it takes to get a guy pulled from the lineup. But in my view, one bad game shouldn't be what pulls the guy from the lineup. So I don't think he should get pulled. But if you're being consistent with how you've treated some of the other center backs, he probably should. But, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. I think Porter is a big fan of Arriaga. I think Arriaga has, you know, played pretty well over their 4-game winning streak, and one bad performance is not going to be enough for Porter to pull him. There's always, you know, there's a Wednesday game. You don't know if he wants to rotate, but I think, you know, he'll be starting one of the next 2 games at least, if not both.
Yeah, and I mean, let's put the shoe on the other foot here, though. Let's say you're making the decision. You know what? And we've talked about this the past 2-3 months anyway. You know, what do you think is the ideal center back pairing after seeing this game? Do you think that would you personally go back to Henry Kessler and Dave Romney? Would you potentially move Kessler back in for Romney? What do you think is the best? We got another comment here. Arriaga misjudges the long ball for the first goal, shows the forward the inside for the second goal. He's usually solid, right? Can we chalk this up at a bad day at the office? I mean, I think you and I agree that Porter is going to chalk this up as a bad day at the office. But if you were writing the lineup card, I mean, would you be giving him that benefit of the doubt, or do you think you'd mix it up?
I would start him again. And if you asked me 4 weeks ago before this winning streak, I probably would have had a different answer. I probably would have said, you know, keep Kessler and Romney out there and let them kind of continue to build that pairing. I don't think they were as bad as Porter said, but you know, after the last 4 weeks and how well he's generally played until this game, I do think I would give him the benefit of the doubt and give him another game. Now, if he has a stinker in Atlanta, you know, then it's another story, but I don't think the right move is after one bad game to pull a guy. And I think he's, you know, generally played well and paired well with Romney. And you know, as obvious as his errors were in this game, there were a lot of other guys that made some pretty terrible errors too.
Yeah. The anime stoner on Twitter also says, I hope Porter doesn't use this as an excuse to take out Romney. So he has that kind of reaction of maybe Romney is going to be the one that suffers from this one. But truth be told, I mean, you could really pick a handful of players that could sub that. It'll be interesting since they have 2 midweek games coming up. There's going to be a lot of rotation. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of players that have the chance to improve their status with the team. It'll be interesting to see if someone who currently is on the outside looking in has a couple of stellar performances to get some more minutes down the stretch. Monsieur Butts, I don't know if that's his real name or not, but he says, what's Polster and Arriaga have to do to get subbed out? Both were awful this match. Arriaga's fault on at least two of the goals. And then he also says, also, do you agree this team would have been better keeping the formation, but using Esmer as a 10 and Nolbuck on the right wing? So I'm guessing 4-2-3-1, Nolbuck on the right, Ema on the left, Esmer in the center. Do you think maybe that performance, I know we talked about the 4-3-3 a little bit earlier and we were fine with it, but do you think maybe they should have stuck with their typical 4-2-3-1 just with Esmer as a 10?
I don't. I mean, I think the way they play in that formation is so reliant on Carles Hill that nobody else can really approximate that or even do that in a poor man's way to make it work. And I also don't really like Nolbuck on the wing. I think Tom might have a different view on Nolbuck on the wing and might want to see him there more. I'm not a huge fan of Nolbuck on the wing. I don't think he's looked that good when he's been out there. So I don't love that idea. And you know, going back to what's it going to take to get Arriaga and Polster pulled, I think for Arriaga, it's more than one bad game. For Polster, who knows?
One more substitution question here. Hopskick says, why doesn't the Jack P and Bobby Wood sub happen before Brandon By and Kai? And this kind of it goes with his, you know, what purpose was the Mark Anthony K substitution supposed to have? Do you think Jack P and Wood should have came on a little bit earlier? I mean, I don't think that would have had much impact on the game, would you like to have seen them getting a longer run out there?
I mean, it was like moving deck chairs in the Titanic at that point. When you're down 3-1 to the Crew at halftime, you don't have Carles, you don't have Chocolate, you don't have Dylan Barrero, the game's over. So I guess I can't be too fussed with the subs. Does Bobby Wood have more than 8 minutes in his legs right now? I don't know the answer to that, but I think that's part of the reason why you didn't see Bobby Wood sooner. I guess I can't be too fussed with it. And Jack P coming on in the 69th minute, he's just a guy that's had so few minutes for this team to kind of throw him out there any earlier. And I guess it was only a 5-minute difference. A lot of things went wrong in this game, but I think the game was over by halftime.
Well, I think you're making a decent point that, you know, the game's over. So put on Jack P, see what he's got, because we need a pretty good sample size of what he has in him. You've called him up from RIFC. If anything, this is a time you do get him in the game. But really, he only came in after, I believe he came in for Ema, right? So the only reason he's coming into this game, that's the only reason he came in. Ema probably would have gone 90 minutes. I don't know.
I guess the other question, though, is if you're not looking at it that way and you're looking at it as because I think my assumption is this question I was looking at it is what's going to take to turn around the game. Who do you put Jack P in for at that point?
Yeah.
If Ema doesn't get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you put in Jack P basically can see the game because I assume, I mean.
Because right. You're not going to take out Esmer for Jack P.
No.
Or if you're going to try to go offensive, you know, and risk losing even more than 5-1. I mean, do you put him in for Nolbuck? Do you put him in for Harkes instead of Mark Anthony K? I guess those are kind of your options, right?
Yeah, find a way not to put Mark Anthony K into the game. But I don't like Jack P in the central midfield either. I think you either want him as a 10 or you want him as a winger. So yeah, once the game was out of reach, you put in Jack P. We did get a question on thoughts on Bobby Wood's performance. Do you think he should start over Vrioni? You mentioned, does he have 8 minutes in him, more than 8 minutes in him? I don't know. I mean, he's getting very, very small stints in terms of appearances. I would love to see a healthy Bobby Wood because I think there are times when Vrioni is missing and we could use a different player in the striker position in the 70th or 65th or 60th minute, and we don't have anyone. And Bobby Wood is usually never coming in that early in the game. So, I would love to see Bobby Wood healthy again and pick up that role as a backup striker. But I don't have any faith that he can start over Rioni at this point, just because we haven't seen him. I mean, when was the last time we saw 60 minutes out of Bobby Wood? I don't think we've seen 60 minutes from him this season, right?
We have not. We saw 58 minutes from him in the Club America second leg when that was over. But that's it. Yeah. We haven't seen 60 minutes from him since the playoffs in 2013.
Yeah.
And
2023.
Yeah, 2023. Sorry.
He hasn't been that unhealthy for that long.
He has been pretty unhealthy over the years, but we also haven't even seen him on the bench since June 8th before this game. So I don't think he's anywhere near ready to start. I don't know that he will be again. So I think that's why we're not seeing him over Rioni more. He hasn't been healthy. He hasn't even been healthy enough to be on the bench until this game. So
yes. Yeah. And you know, if there's ever a time we're going to see him get some minutes, it's going to be back-to-back games. Cause that's a tough task for Rioni. You know, what, 81 minutes Saturday, 90 minutes Wednesday, 90 minutes Saturday again. So, it'll be, keep an eye on Bobby Wood. If there's ever a time to stretch him out and see what he's got, I mean, he should be getting 20 to 30 minutes, I'd say, on Wednesday at the least, if he's that healthy. If he's not healthy, then we'll probably see the role he's being used in. So, Mike Kennedy says, hello, darkness, my old friend. And also says, any word on the extent of Carlos Heel's injury? I've heard a rumor that I can't confirm that Carlos Heel's injury is not severe. So he might be back this week. Don't trust me on that. That is just an internet rumor I have seen. That's what I've heard. And Barrero, I know he's not asking about Barrero, but I believe Porter said Barrero is expected to be a short-term injury. So hopefully we have some reinforcements coming this week. Mild Bill Davis says the Revs need a backup for Carlos. Is there an affordable veteran MLS player that the Revs could bring in this summer? And then I believe someone, John, says that's Esmir. Don't waste money there. Buy good players in the midfield and defense. I agree with John. I think if you're going to have you need a backup for Carlos, you might as well run out Esmir and try to build from within, because I think you have so many other needs surrounding that 10 position that and you're going to have limited resources for the most part. Again, we'll talk about the roster and what it looks like right now towards the end of the show. But I think Esmir is the answer there, and there's going to be some growing pains for sure. But I think that's the answer if you're looking for a replacement Carlos Heel. It's going to be very, very difficult. And we found this out in 2020 when, you know, Carlos Heel was out a lot longer. It's very, very hard to replace Carlos Heel, and you're not going to really be able to acquire someone on an affordable contract that gives you that level of skill and production. So I think at that point you just go with the young gun. I should also say the Revs, you know, if Carlos Heel's injury is significant and it's out for a long time, I think the Revs become sellers and not necessarily buyers in this next transfer window, because I think the writing may be on the wall for them. Sean, anything you want to add there?
No, I think you covered that one perfectly. I mean, you look at the one time that the Revs did have a backup number 10, it was when, you know, Lee Wynn became available late in the season in 2020, and they're not going to get a guy like that again. It's just not going to happen. And I completely agree with John. They have more important priorities right now. But, you know, getting a good number 10 is a very, very difficult thing to do. Getting a good backup 10 that's even worth having at a salary it's going to take, it's just unrealistic, and they're better off addressing other positions. And I think if Carlos Heel does go down injured, the Revs are in a lot of trouble regardless of who they bring in as that backup. And at that point, you know, you're probably sellers and you're probably changing formation.
Mm-hmm. Let's move up to the striker position. We have a lot of complaints about Vrioni. This is about all designated players, but Hopskip says, what an absolute mess of our designated players, an aging star with growing injury issues, a guy who can't stay healthy or be part of the team in Chankalai, and Vrioni. Just and Vrioni. And then Thomas on Twitter says, every few weeks it gets funnier to me that Vrioni was a Juventus youth player. How a DP striker has the chances he had tonight and doesn't score is beyond me. Derek says on Twitter, Vrioni is so inconsistent. I don't blame him and his teammates for not passing to him. We need a new striker this summer so Vrioni can be buried on the bench until his contract runs out. Sean, last week, Vrioni was the greatest striker on earth, and he was turning a corner, and everything was magic. And I was reading on Twitter that Vrioni would have more goals, but Esmir doesn't pass to him. Sean, what's going on here? Is Vrioni not good anymore? What's your assessment on Vrioni overall? I know we talked about his game, but have you lost faith in him? Where do you stand?
I mean, I never gained faith in him. I think it's kind of a fool me once type of thing. And he's had those moments we talked about before where he scored a brace in a game. And he said, maybe he's turning things around. And then he has a game like this. And it's happened enough times now where I didn't fall for it this time. And so, no, I'm not surprised by what happened in this game. And it's extremely disappointing to see him do this after having a brace and scoring three goals in two games. But I'm not surprised, right? I think we've had him here long enough now where if you are surprised, I don't know what you've been watching.
everyone has that friend that's in a relationship and it's a toxic relationship. And your friend eventually is just like, you know, grows a spine and breaks up. And the person comes back and says what they want to hear. And it's like, okay, everything's fixed. And then like 2 weeks later, they're back to it. That's essentially Vrioni and Revs fans, where Revs fans give up on them. They're done with them. They want them out. Next transfer window, send out Vrioni. Then boom, a brace. Everything's great. They're in love again. Everything's wonderful. And then, you know, we end up here all over again and nothing has changed. I do want to take a minute. I think the Vrioni conversation is a little bit more nuanced than Vrioni good, Vrioni bad. Vrioni has a great left foot. I know he skied a shot yesterday. So I understand. I know someone's going to tweet at me and say, well, he missed a shot with a left foot high yesterday. Yep, that's absolutely right. But he can score. He has a powerful left foot and he's improved. He has improved, I think, in the press. I think he's impressed with his holdup play. I think he's better at aerials, although he's still not amazing at aerials and aerial duels. He has no right foot. He can't really score with his right foot that well. He's not amazing in the air. He's not Adam Buxa. And we've talked about it. There's limited ways in which he can score. And last week, the ways we saw him scoring was he kind of held up. He got away from the defense a little bit. Esmer would make a run towards goal and kind of pull the defense with him. And he was left open, you know, one touch, put the ball on his left foot, had a wonderful strike, had a nice header that he guided onto target when he was wide open. If he's able to get into space and open space, and if he's able to fire a shot off with his left foot, he's a great striker. Even the shot he missed yesterday was a powerful strike. The problem is he's not a complete player. And so you're going to get good games out of him. You're going to get Vrioni games where he's going to score a brace or he's going to score a nice goal. And you're going to say, oh man, this guy's great. But it's not great. You're just seeing in limited ways he can score. He's a limited player and he's not going to be anything more than this. So, I think a center forward is on the table in terms of this upcoming transfer window. I don't think Vrioni is going to work out. I don't think he's going to be sold to a higher league for a higher fee, which is, you know, the Revs model. You bring in a player for $4 million, you want to sell him to $7 to $10 million 2 years later. That's not going to happen for him. He's going to be here until his contract runs out, or they sell him to an equal or lower league. They might have to eat his salary just to get him off the roster, but he's not made for much higher than the level than MLS. It just is who he is, but he's going to have good games. He's going to have good games. It's just frustrating because he's never going to, I don't have any faith he's ever going to evolve beyond what he is right now.
No, I don't know if I'd go as far to say he has a great left foot. He has a, you know, decent, good left foot. At times it looks good and at other times it doesn't. But he's just I think in the past, Tom's talked about how he, you know, can score in certain ways or really in one way. And if he doesn't get the ball that way, it's a problem. We saw plenty of times in this past game where he was an opportunity to have a good shot with his right foot and couldn't do it. When you're paying a guy DP wages, that's just not good enough. And if Giacomo Vrioni was your backup striker and he was on, you know, 500K salary for an MLS team, that would be, you know, it would be unacceptable, right, for him to play the way that he plays. But for him to be making the money he's making, to be taking up a DP spot and to be their, you know, the Revs, supposed to be the Revs star number nine, it's really disappointing. And he might have, like you said, good games here and there, but it's clearly not good enough. And one of the comments was about him being a Juventus youth player. You know, that's not the part that surprises me so much, because we, you know, there's so many players that have gone through the books of Juventus or, you know, at Chelsea or Manchester City or Man United that, you know, really turn out to be mediocre players. What surprises me is that he, you know, we've talked about this before. He went to the Austrian Bundesliga on loan. He was tied for the top scorer with, you know, Karim Adeyemi with 19 goals in 2021, 2022, which, you know, it's not a bad league. I don't know how he did that. I still don't know how he did that. That to me is the shock, not the fact that he was a Juventus youth player, because there's so many players that go through the books of teams like that, you know, don't pan out.
The irony here, because everyone talks about Adam Buxa and you know, his status. I feel like every now and then you hear an Adam Buxa coming back to MLS thing. But if you compare Adam Buxa's resume to Vrioni's resume when they came to MLS, Vrioni blew Buxa's his resume out of the water. I mean, it wasn't even close. Buxa was playing in the Polish league, which is a much lower league than Austria. He wasn't, you know, a youth academy player. I believe Rioni was already getting international call-ups, whereas Buxa wasn't. Buxa was a much younger and more raw player. I believe the fees were around the same. Rioni looked like a great addition on paper, and he just hasn't been able to piece it together. It is what it is. But it'll be interesting to see if the team goes out and addresses that position, what happens to Rioni, because he didn't finish as the starter last year. I think it's very possible if the Revs are really fighting for playoff position, he doesn't end up to be the starter at the end of the year this year. And who knows, if Bobby Wood is completely healthy, he may not be starting at this point. So Steve says on Twitter, Arriaga, Rioni, Mark Anthony K. Ivicic, take your pick. Not a whole lot of positives, and I agree on all that. Mike Kennedy says, get Tom and Corey from Twitter together just to go off. Don't bleep anything out. Porter and Alfo, Arena Craft, the stadium marketing, everything is on the table. Popcorn emoji. But then he says, but seriously, who cares? Heelless Revs against the defending champs. What did we expect? Should add that the Columbus Crew were +110, quote unquote underdogs, going into that game yesterday. So if you notice that line, on BetOnline, you could have gotten a pretty sharp line when lineups came out, and Barrero and Heel were not in the lineup. Chris Felucas, former friend, former co-host of the show, team needs to get healthy. They were likely to lose this game regardless, but the focus needs to be on the next few matches in winnable games and getting key players back. I stole my key takeaway from Chris's comment. Apparently, I didn't see that before the game. Sorry about that, Chris. Totally stole your key takeaway. Steve says, bad officiating to start with, but at best, uninspiring defense with a keeper that couldn't be bothered to make an effort at two of the five goals. So another comment there, noticing Ivicic's pretty less than stellar night there. And maybe I would say, too, we talk about Arriaga and this being his weakest performance as a Rev. I also think a lot of blame, you know, it should be pointed toward Ivicic, and it'll be interesting to see how he responds in the next game. We talk about if Arriaga is losing his spot. I don't think Ivicic has any chance of losing the number one job. Do you, Sean? All right, I'll keep power.
No, I don't. Oh. I don't think he has any chance of losing his spot. But it's funny to watch that game and then be, you know, watching England Slovakia today and see Henrik Ravas in the knockout round of the Euros, not playing but on the bench, as Slovakia is very unlucky to lose to England on a 95th minute equalizer and then an extra time goal. But you know, there's obviously some talent in Ravas if he keeps getting calls up to Slovakia and being there. And I don't think Ivicic is in any chance of losing it. And I think that Porter is going to hold the fact that Ravas hasn't been there training with the team against him too, when it comes to, you know, even considering it.
Brandon Popper says, why doesn't our keeper like to dive on those shots taken by the other team? His performance tonight wasn't very inspiring. Corey, Jones's distribution, Arriaga's off night, Mark Anthony K. And when can he be traded? Sorry. These are multiple things he wants us to talk about. Jones's distribution, Arriaga's off night. We already talked about that. Mark Anthony K, and when can he be traded away? Mark Anthony K has a guaranteed contract next year, and that's a TAM deal. Good luck getting that off the books. That would be a salary dump, and I don't know how. I don't see any team wanting that contract, to be honest with you. That's, you know, we don't talk about it enough. Mark Anthony K is in, you know, if they add the second buyout and you're not buying out Rioni, Mark Anthony K is in buyout territory, in my opinion, just with the depth you have there and that massive bloated contract. And Corey also wants us to talk about why Ima is the best value by cap spend on the whole team. Although you could argue there are some supplemental players there too. You could argue Esmir and Noel Buck. They're supplemental roster players too. So they might be the better value too. But Ima Boateng, I believe, is still on a supplemental roster contract. So his salary doesn't go against the cap. So year after year after year, I feel like this is 3 years running. Ima Boateng has been a phenomenal value for the Revs. And hopefully he's okay. No update on him after this game. He did mention DeJuan Jones' distribution. What were your thoughts on DeJuan, Sean? Did you have any thoughts about his performance? He certainly didn't seem to have a good performance whatsoever. It looks like he was actually the third lowest player on FootMob with a 4.5 rating. I'm just pulling up his numbers here. 41 for 57 passing. That's 72%. 1 for 3 on crossing. 3 for 7 on long balls. He only had one touch in the opposition box. 5 passes into the final third, which seems a little bit low for him. 73 touches overall. 0 for 4 on ground duels and 2 for 2 on aerial duels. The 0 for 4 on ground duels is not amazing. What were your thoughts on DeJuan Jones's night, John?
It was a bad performance. There's no getting around it. Offensively, he didn't look as effective as usual. Defensively, I don't know that he was necessarily one of the biggest contributors to the 5 goals they gave up, but he had a couple of not so positive moments there either. So it was a very poor performance from him. Overall, you know, we've seen enough of him to not be worried by one bad showing, but it was a bad showing. But really quickly, though, one other guy that you could have thrown into the conversation for best contract before this game was Ivicic, who's on a minimum deal and on the supplemental roster too. Probably not saying that after this game, but prior to that, I think he'd be in that conversation.
I agree 100%. Portland is paying for the majority of his salary because he was waived. So the Revs are paying really the minimum, and that's not going against their cap whatsoever. So even if he was a backup or third string keeper, you know, if you can get a third string keeper on the supplemental roster, that's typically what you want. The Revs have a starter there. So he actually might, even with the bad performance yesterday, he might be the best value for the Revs there. Mike says, are we able to tell how our ACL tear rate compares to other teams? It seems high, and we aren't the only team that plays on turf. And that is related to Thomas Shankly, who has a partially torn right ACL. We'll talk about it at the end. I don't know what the rate is compared to other teams. It does seem high, and I feel like I think they hired a new head athletic trainer this week as well. It seems like we're hiring a new head athletic trainer every 2 or 3 years at this stage. And I do remember talking in the off season. There was a quote from Caleb Porter. I don't have it up with me, but Tom Pinzone mentioned it on this podcast too, that, you know, injuries can be prevented if you, you know, train a certain way. And, you know, there's a way to prevent injuries, soft tissue injuries. And it seems like, that isn't going very well. So I wish I had the full quote with me.
Look dumb right now.
No, I, there's a lot of things that were said in this past off season by Caleb Porter that seemed to be completely opposite of what has played out. But the injury woes continue for the Revs. And I don't have the data compared to where we compare to other teams, but I mean, Shankly, Barrero, Bai, I mean, how many ACLs can one team tear in a year? I mean, am I missing anyone?
Yeah, it feels high. I can't say I've taken the time to do the research to know how it compares to anyone else, and I do not intend to do that because that sounds very painful, and also very difficult to find all that data in one place. So, but yeah, it feels really bad. And the past couple of years, in particular, have been, you know, whether it's bad luck or what, it's certainly a high number.
And then Kessler had what, hamstring last year, and then Bobby Wood has his knee issues. Although that probably came with Bobby Wood when we acquired him. It's been rough.
I can't blame Bobby Wood on the Revs because he's had injury issues for a long time.
Yeah, but I don't like making the simple, oh, it's the turf, but I mean, man, it's crazy. I mean, the past 2-3 years has been just absolutely outrageous in terms of the number of injuries this team has had to overcome. And if Hill or Barrero is significant, which again, we're hearing it's not, I mean, that's really, really hard to overcome. So Trey, seemed rough, couldn't watch the game, but should we consider hiring Ben Sweat as a coach? His team that he's an assistant for hasn't lost 5-1. Bringing him in as a known guy couldn't hurt us, I don't think. Sean, do you think Ben Sweat is the guy that can turn this team around?
I didn't know he was coaching. Maybe.
I don't know. But they haven't lost 5-1. Ben Sweat, coach. He's obviously not coaching hugging, I'll say that.
But I'll take the word for it.
Apparently he is a fisherman now.
I got that far.
Google results?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, he joined the coaching staff for level up camps at Tampa Bay United.
Tampa Bay United, and they haven't lost 5-1. Well, do they even play games? It sounds like it's like a youth camp.
I think it's a summer camp. I don't know. Sort of youth team. I don't think he's quite at that level yet, but we'll keep him on the radar for future coaching staff.
You can't lose 5-1 at youth soccer camps, and you can't lose 5-1 when you're bass fishing. So this comment is technically true. Thank you to everyone who sent in the listener questions. We do have some news and notes before we wrap up here today. And Sean, Ben Sweat as assistant coach might not be the most head-scratching move for an MLS team to make this week, because Sporting Kansas City hired their new sporting director, and it was old friend of the New England Revolution, Mike Burns. Sean, let's get your take here. What do you think of this hire by Sporting Kansas City, and do you think it could be a success?
I'm absolutely shocked to see that. I don't know what he's been doing since he left the Revs. Have we heard anything?
He's been chilling.
Yeah, I don't
Someone
think
told me... Someone told me a while ago he was like a substitute teacher at like Marlboro High School or something. But that totally could have been a lie. Someone could have just totally been messing with me.
No, I mean I'm just shocked. I don't have much to say other than I'm shocked, and there weren't other options.
It seems very bizarre. One, because he's been out so long, and it's one thing to be out. I mean, he was fired for Bruce Arena. So what? 5 years? It's been five years. Not only are you not in MLS for 5 years, but a lot has changed in 5 years in Major League Soccer. Salaries have almost doubled. The average salary has almost doubled. Most teams have three designated players at this point. Most teams are using resources to their max capacity. The Mike Burns era, which spanned from, when was he hired, Sean? 2008? Do you remember?
I think it was before that. It's been a long, because he was there when Nicol was the coach for most of the tenure, at least. It might have been, but it was before 2008. Exactly when? 2005 was when he was the director of soccer.
Oof, oh my goodness, 14 years of Mike Burns. But those 14 years were a totally different era of Major League Soccer. So I'm curious to see how this turns out. And I think the other thing too is that, yeah, the coaches for the Revolution kind of reported to Mike Burns. So, you know, Jay Heaps, Brad Friedel, Steve Nicol, you know, it seemed like Mike Burns had a pretty good handle on the roster. And the team was limited in a lot of ways. And I feel like in Sporting Kansas City, you know, he's not going to go to Peter Vermes and say, "Hey, Peter, I know you're on the hot seat, but let me tell you about roster flexibility." You know what I mean? I don't think he's going to be pitching one designated player and, you know, only filling 22 roster spots out of 30 to Peter Vermes. So he's going to have a much different experience as a sporting director than he did in his 14 years as a with the Revolution. And, you know, he certainly didn't have, you know, he had some good, he had some hits, you know, Lee Wynn and, you know, Tejon Buchanan and Brandon Bye and Andrew Farrell, you know, those were all super draft picks for him. You can certainly run down the list and, you know, pick out a handful of players that Mike Burns found and brought onto the Revs that certainly he deserves a lot of credit for. But you look at that 14-year tenure, and there was a lot more negative than positive, including the dismantling of, you know, the 2000s Revs, where they essentially went from a dynasty to the worst team in the league. So very confused at this hire. I'm curious to see how well he is able to adapt to modern MLS. And it's certainly not a great situation over there in Kansas City either. So God bless Sporting Kansas City. I'm curious to see how this pans out.
Well, it's worth just noting the background of Kansas City's sporting director's hires, because they did hire a sporting director in January, Gavin Wilkinson, which was a huge mistake, after he was fired from Portland for all the stuff that was going on there with sexual harassment under Paul Riley, who was sexually harassing people on the Portland Thorns, the women's team, and he was responsible for his hire. And there was lots of stuff came out that was not so great about how Gavin Wilkinson handled all that stuff. So they then went and hired him. People protested tremendously against that, and then they reneged that hire. That was their previous attempt to hire a sporting director. And I think now they've hired a guy in Mike Burns that does very well of keeping himself out of the limelight and out of the public. And as far as we're aware, has not been accused of anything like that. So at least on that side of things, if they're trying to go for what seems like a safe hire that keeps himself out of the limelight and off the field stuff and non-soccer related stuff, maybe that's what they were looking for.
A very low bar that Mike Burns apparently has hurdled. This is a very stunning move.
Not very ambitious.
I really struggle. I mean, how is it possible that Mike Burns, did no one else apply for the job? I mean, he hasn't been in MLS for 5 years. And, he was noted as one of the most difficult GMs to work with. Multiple agents talked about how no players will go to New England because Mike Burns is so hard to negotiate with. Year after year, I mean, we talk about the Revs not doing enough this past offseason under Anolfo. I mean, that was the norm with Mike Burns. They seem to just be complacent with their roster time and time again. And Sporting Kansas City is a team that needs a lot of improvement. And you're going into a new era of the league where you need a lot more creativity, you know, high spending, designated players, U22s, evolving rules. It's going to be a test for Mike Burns. And, you know, I think there are some players that he found, you know, he was great at the super draft. You can certainly list the players he drafted and Kellen Rowe and Andrew Farrell and Brandon Bye and Tejan Buchanan and say, look, he's great at the super draft, but the super draft is irrelevant now. So it's going to be if you can teach an old dog new tricks. But his resume certainly doesn't seem like he should be someone who's hired in MLS in 2024. I think it's possible for him to be a success. As I say, I think Peter Vermees will have a louder voice than he will in the room. So maybe that direction will help him, even though Peter Vermees is certainly on the hot seat. But this one is one of the more bizarre things to happen in MLS in a long, long, long time. So anyway, Sean, any final thoughts? You want to move on?
Yeah, I think you summed it up well.
Thomas Chocolat, torn ACL, partially torn ACL. We knew this was going to be bad. It's been months and months since, it feels like months and months since we've gotten an update on him. But clearly, you know, there was no other option. He's going to be having surgery soon. And it seems interesting that they have not had surgery yet. So it means that the past few weeks, however long it's been since he's played, 4 weeks, you know, seems like they stalled on having surgery. And now his rehab has kind of been stalled for about a month because it seems like they were undecided on what to do. So I'm guessing they were trying to see if he could come back and play this season, if there was any way to recover without surgery going under the knife. And it seems like it got to a point where that was just not possible. Maybe they got a second or third opinion. But either way, Thomas Chocolat put on the season-ending injury list. What that means, because I know there's going to be a lot of people asking questions in terms of the roster, what does that mean? When you place a player on the season-ending injury list, you get roster relief. And that means that any spots that they hold, you know, so Thomas Chocolat, in this case, he holds a senior roster spot. So now that he's on the season-ending injury list, he's taken off of the senior roster spot. So they now have a senior roster spot. They also have an international roster spot because Thomas Chocolat takes up an international roster spot, and they get a designated player spot back. So the Revs, you know, previously they didn't have a ton of flexibility, and it seemed like the Revs were, you know, their season kind of hinged on if the MLS rules would change to granting all teams 3 designated players and 3 U22s. Now they have a designated player spot, so they don't need a rule change to make a big splash in the summer. Where it's going to come into play, though, is if you sign a designated player and you give him a 3 or 4 year contract, when Chocolat comes back, he's not going to be on the season ending injury list next year. So you're going to have 4 designated players next year because all 3 right now are under contract for 2025. So maybe you can sign a designated player and just buy out Vrioni or try to sell Vrioni in the offseason. I think there's another few options they could do. They could designate a player who is over, that makes more than whatever is $650,000 as a designated player. And that kind of creates some money that way. So Henry Kessler, for example, makes $1 million. You could just make him a designated player and that frees up some money. That's not very ambitious, but if you didn't want to commit to another designated player, at the very least, you can free up a little bit of money that way and trade the international roster spot. But then the other thing too, that I think you could do is, you know, if you don't have 3 senior designated players on your roster, you can have up to 3 U22 players. So I think the route that the Revs should be looking into is not looking at a 3rd designated player, but instead they should be looking into 2 more U22s, because the rules apparently are going to be changing anyway. Even if they don't change the summer, I'm sure they're going to change in the offseason. Now the Revs can get a jump on signing 2 U22 players, and you could bring in theory, a striker and a midfielder, and really improve your team that way. So there's some flexibility that the Revs can do. Obviously, losing Thomas Chocolat is a massive blow to the team, especially too with all the wingers that they have out on this team, and also the lack of striker options up top since we saw Chocolat playing as the 9. Sean, what's your reaction to Thomas Chocolat going on the season-ending injury list? And where do you think that, do you think the Revs will make a bigger splash this summer with him out? And 2, where do you think they should be looking?
Yeah, I mean, it's terrible news for the Revs, obviously. They needed Chocolat, was such a big part of this team, and such a big part of the creative force and the offense. So, you know, just from that, it's terrible news. And when a guy tears his ACL too, it takes a long time to come back from that too, as we saw with Brandon Bye. And you always wonder if they kind of come back because exactly the same player. It doesn't always happen that way. So fingers crossed that everything works out well and he comes back. But for the season, certainly it's very bad news. With that said, you know, opening up a designated player spot certainly makes things interesting for the summer. You know, you mentioned the difficulty of signing a guy now and then being stuck with having, you know, four designated players next year and having to move on from one. If anything, if they're convinced that they need to move on from Frioni, it, you know, buys them another 6 months to find a way to get rid of them and, you know, maybe bring another striker now and let him compete. And then 6 months from now, kick the can down the road and buy out Frioni or find somewhere to let him go for free and mutually terminate. But yeah, I mean, I think they do need to make sure that they use this designated player spot if they think they have any hope of doing anything this season, and, you know, probably use it on a striker, and, you know, that maybe saves them from buying out Frioni this summer and lets them kick the can down the road 6 months. Alternatively, they could maybe do something like they did with Chonkalai and sign a guy on maybe a 6 month loan that may or may not make him a designated player with a buy option in the winter, and use that designated player spot to do that, and then make a decision in 6 months on whether they want to keep that guy or and move on from one of the other designated players, or whether they want to, you know, just move on from that guy. But in some way they have to use that spot.
Yeah. And that's another thing they can do. They can look to loan a player, that, you know, if you can, you know, if your loan fee is high, you could have a 1 year designated player through the end of the year. Now, obviously, you know, the international schedule doesn't line up. So, you know, what international team has a striker that they're going to loan to you for 6 months and, you know, who's currently fit right now in their off season? There's a number of hurdles there that, you know, a 6 month loan for a designated player isn't an ideal. So I think something like you mentioned, a younger player like Chonkalai, who's on a 6 month contract, and if you exercise the purchase option, it becomes a designated player. You know, you can make that decision if you're able to dispose of Frioni when the time comes. Another thing too, you could do is you could trade for a designated player that is on the books of a struggling team. I know Tom Bogart and David Goss on their podcast SoccerCast the other day, they mentioned Raul Rodriguez over there in Seattle, and he's, you know, he was described as Jozy Altidore 2.0. So I don't know if that's a hit, but, you know, if there's an expiring DP contract, I think Alec Polito has a contract at the end of the year. His contract is expiring. Maybe a name like that who you can, you know, a team will salary dump their DP contract onto you, and maybe they attach a nice little asset, maybe a, you know, some GAM or a super draft pick or, you know, a young player or something to that effect that kind of fill a need. Or maybe, you know, they send a player over here and you send them Mark Anthony Kay to get Mark Anthony Kay's contract off the book. There's some kind of creative solution, but if this team is looking to win MLS Cup this year, I think you need to go all out and bring in a designated player who can come in and make an immediate impact. And I believe the summer transfer window opens up, I believe July 18th, and it closes in mid-August. And then from there, you only have 10 or 12 games. So, you know, time is ticking and the transfer window is opening up in less than 3 weeks. And so I think the Reds will have to play their cards pretty quickly, all things considered. John, any final thoughts on that, or should I move on?
No, I mean, I think they just absolutely have to do something with that spot if they have, you know, any ambitions to do anything this season. It is an interesting thought to kind of look in MLS and see who might have a DP on an expiring contract that they, you know, might want to move on for 6 months and do something that way. I don't know that Rui Diaz would be the answer. It's funny to hear him called Jozy Altidore 2.0. I think he still has a couple more goals than Frioni does this year.
Jozy Altidore is a free agent too. If we needed a striker, we could just give him a call.
Rui Diaz does have 8 goals this year, despite kind of a questionable season, which is
not Jozy three more than
Frioni. I don't know if I'd call that Jozy
2.0. I don't think Tom Bogart was watching Jozy Altidore as a New England Revolution player. I think he missed. I think there's a bit of a gap between 8 goals, even if they're tap-ins.
Rui Diaz, his problem is he can't stay healthy. At least my understanding is he has, you know, he's getting up there in age. He can't stay healthy, but when he is healthy, he still produces, which is not the case for Jozy.
Yeah. Jozy's problem was he was healthy. We had to watch him play. That was his problem. final bit of news here. The Blazing Musket, but the Blazing Musket confirmed it. The Revs are interested in Israeli forward Dor Turgman. I apologize for the mispronunciation. I've mispronounced like five names in the show. I apologize. There's also reports that they are interested in midfielder Dor Peretz. Dor Peretz is a 29-year-old midfielder. Turgman is a 20-year-old striker. They both play for Maccabi Tel Aviv over in the Israeli Premier League. Since Turgman is a 20-year-old, it strikes me as a potential U22 player. Again, U22 players differ from designated players because designated players, there's no restrictions whatsoever on salary, transfer fees, age whatsoever. There's young designated players where there's no restrictions on salary or transfer fee, but they do have to be a certain age. U22 players have to be a certain age and have to have a certain salary, but you can have unlimited transfer fee or loan fee, any acquisition fees you can. It's unlimited. So the fact that they're interested in a 20-year-old who's already making caps for the Israeli national team, that strike me as a potential U22 player, assuming that he's not making more than $650,000 over in the Israeli league, which maybe he is. That would be the game changer there. But again, I want to just as a grain of salt here, interest is a very low bar. The fact that the Revs have been tied to two players from the same team strikes me that a scout went over there for, a trip to watch a game. They probably mentioned, these are two guys I could see playing for this team. And then, an agent may have started talking. I mean, that could be as little as that. So the fact that there's two players from the same team that the Revs are linked to, I think this might just be an agent talking, trying to drum up some interest in his players. It should also be mentioned, too, that I believe Turgman is keen on going to Europe as opposed to going to MLS. So maybe it would be a loan type deal, similar to Sean Kalai's last year. Who knows? But that is in the news, and that's going to be something to keep an eye on over the next few weeks. Sean, any reaction to the latest Revs rumors here on the transfer market?
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend that I watch the Israeli league, at all. So I can't comment on the quality of these players from, what we've heard. The 20-year-old striker has a promising future and there's some interest in him. What's interesting to me is the Revs very much do need a striker, but, I'm not going to go into the reasons why, but we've talked, ad nauseum on past shows about how Caleb Porter doesn't seem to have much interest in playing young guys. So I don't know that that's, is that what Caleb Porter wants? He's also a guy that, yes, he's probably very promising, but I don't think he scored more than 7 goals in a season. His career high, I think, was 7 goals last year. So it seems like he's more of a project, a long-term project. And is that really what Caleb Porter wants? I don't know. Maybe that would be a good move for the Revs and he can step right in, but they do need a striker, but I'm a little bit skeptical of that. And then the central midfielder, I think was 28, 29. And I think he's captain or vice captain of the team. They needed an 8 or a 6, I think, based on what we've seen from Porter and what he's thinks of kind of the options he has there. So that wouldn't surprise me. And he's an experienced veteran with, some leadership roles. So, again, haven't seen these guys play, but the two positions make sense. And the experience of a, 6 or 8 central midfielder certainly makes a lot of sense, but I do question on, how much time Caleb Porter is going to be willing to give kind of a project young forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as I say, I think this one passes the sniff test because of the age, because it could be a U22 player and that's where they have the ability to expand their roster. Sometimes a player, there's a rumor. What was the 35-year-old striker from South America this past offseason? I forget his name, but he would have had to have been a designated player. That one didn't pass the sniff test whatsoever. The fact that they're looking at a 20-year-old striker, the age and the position makes a little bit more sense to me. But as I say, interest is a very low bar. So I'm curious. It seems like he is not keen on coming to MLS either. So it might just be that. It might just be interest. We'll see. We will see very much. So Sean, that wraps us up here. Any final thoughts, any words of wisdom you would like to give our listeners, as they go into the following week?
I wish I could be more positive after this last weekend. But this next week is going to be very interesting to see how they react to this game, who's available, who's healthy. But, I do think that this past weekend was a reality check that this team that had that 4-game winning streak still has a lot of flaws.
Mm-hmm. And Sean, I do have to put you on the spot here. I love making you make predictions. This week, Tour de France kicked off. Got to ask you, do you think Jonas Vingegaard makes it three in a row? Do you think he wins the Tour de France this year?
Is he on steroids?
Well, I mean, allegedly, that's the accusations. But, I mean, they're all on steroids, aren't they? That's what I learned from Lance Armstrong. Way to dodge the question, by the way. Way to dodge the question. Give me a yes or no. I want you on.
The only guy in Tour de France I could tell you whose name of is Lance Armstrong, who I know is no longer participating. I did. Yeah. So I'm sorry.
You got to give me a prediction. Vingegaard or Pogacar? Go.
Vingegaard. There's okay. My very informed opinion.
There you have it. Sean Donahue guarantees Jonas Vingegaard goes three in a row at the Tour de France this year. I will just give a shout out to PBS 508. He's the only person that left a 5-star review for us on Sean. He's the only person that wished me happy birthday this past week. Very sad that we only got 1 5-star review. And so I will say this, we are not planning on doing a show for the Atlanta game because it is July 3rd. So the following day is July 4th and we all have plans, but we are at 119 ratings right now. If we get to 125 by Tuesday, I will go out of my way and I will do a Wednesday night show for the good people. And also, if you guys could also wish me a happy belated birthday. I don't know where you guys are. What I mean, does my birthday mean nothing to you? I'm offended. I'm very offended. And someone said, oh, I already gave you a 5-star rating. Take your girlfriend's phone. Take your brother's phone. Take your wife's phone. Take your wife's boyfriend's phone. Go to the Apple store and take the little display phones and go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating there. There's no excuse. Sean, is there any excuse?
None whatsoever.
No excuse. So if you get us to 125 ratings by Tuesday, we'll do a Wednesday night show. If not, we will talk to you next Saturday. And by next Saturday, I mean, by Sean and a mystery guest, debut guest, Sean, correct?
Yep.
Yep. That's no Tom. No Tom. So I'm sure the Revs will lose in painful fashion and Tom and Zone will have to keep his thoughts to himself for another week.
But you can also read Tom's thoughts on the Blazing Musket too. Don't forget that. And on his Twitter.
Very good plug for our friends over at the Blazing Musket. Make sure you check them out on Substack and you can subscribe for a paid subscription if you would like to support the site that way, or on a free subscription as well. You can find us on any social media platform, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads. Be our friend at Threads. I've abandoned Blue Sky. Sorry, Blue Sky. I've really abandoned. So don't even bother following us on Blue Sky anymore. But the rest of them, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, follow us there. Make sure you rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, especially iTunes if you want a midweek podcast. Just saying. I'm just saying. You guys, really upset you guys for not wishing me happy birthday. That does it. Until next time. Thank you for listening to Revolution Recap presented by BetOnline. We will be back maybe Wednesday, maybe Saturday. Until then, go Revs.